Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 135, Smorgasbord, May 2019. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, having more fun, learning new things, getting inspired. Well, today I have a brand new episode for you, and we're doing my not quite monthly smorgasbord episode. Now, if you're new to the show and you're not exactly sure what a smorgasbord episode is, first of all, welcome. Glad you're here. Glad you found us. But it's an episode where I don't necessarily have one overarching theme or topic, but maybe several small things or smaller, shorter topics that I just kind of tackle all in one episode. And today we're going to be doing some listener questions, so that'll be fun. Of course, so before I get there, just a couple super quick bits of housekeeping. One, always head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com for the show notes for the latest episode. And in this case, it's episode 135. So you can do kitchencounterpodcast.com/135, and that'll take you to the show notes. So if I mention links to recipes or kitchen tools or anything like that, I will have the links over there in those show notes at 135. Also, if you want to have a question on an upcoming smorgasbord or any other episode for that matter, you can always send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Always love to hear from you. I answer all of my emails, and it's just great to hear from you, whether you just want to say hi or ask a question or have ideas for show topics or whatever. Just, send an email, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Of course, there's other ways to interact as well, the Facebook group being one of the more popular ones over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. So if you want to interact with me and other listeners and home cooks and foodies and things like that, go check that out. All right, that's all I've got for housekeeping today. Let's jump in to this smorgasbord episode. All right, first things first, I need some help. And it is, as I'm recording this, right at the end of April 2019, and my family's annual cook-off competition happens on Memorial Day weekend this year, which I don't even have the calendar in front of me. I don't even know what weekend that is. So that should tell you right there how prepared I am for this. I think it's the last weekend of May. Yeah, that sounds right. The 25th, I think, is when it's happening. Anyway, I've been trying to rack my brain on what I'm going to make this year. And you may, if you've listened to the podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about this before. But if you're curious to know what it is I'm talking about, here's the thumbnail sketch. So each year around Memorial Day weekend or thereabouts, we hold an annual family cook-off. And every year there's a theme and family members get together. They bring a dish or they make a dish. We're having it at my house this year. So they make a dish according to the theme. We all do some tasting. We all do some voting for which dishes we like best. And then each year we crown a winner and some runners up for the competition. Now the hitch is winners get to choose what the theme is going to be for the following year's cook-off. And this year, the cook-off theme as chosen by my sister Jenny and her husband Dan, I think they chose it together. Anyway, they won last year. Their theme is "The secret is in the sauce." So I have been racking my brain trying to figure out what a good secret is in the sauce type of a dish that I can do for the cook-off. And I have some ideas, but I really haven't settled on anything and I haven't really done a lot of experimenting and practicing. And I'm trying to figure out something that is delicious, interesting, appealing to a lot of people, and something that can be tried in a small bite, right? So we usually have like 10, 12 entries at the cook-off, so I can't be serving up like a giant bowl of pasta with pasta sauce. It has to be something we can, you know, kind of try in a bite or two. So before I land on any particular thing, I wanted to throw it out to you to see if you have an idea. What, like, if you were in a cook-off and the theme was "the secret is in the sauce" and you had to make bites for, you know, a dozen or 18 people, What would you serve? What would you come up with? If you have any interesting ideas, I would love to hear it. And I might pick one of yours and I might talk about it on an upcoming episode. But if you do have any ideas, definitely throw them over to me at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com or head over to Facebook and send them to me there. So yes, Anderson Family Cook-Off, desperately need a secret is in the sauce idea. And by the way, I've talked to several of my co-competitors, my family members, and it sounds like they're taking a very liberal view of what a sauce is. Sounds like some folks are thinking dips, some folks are thinking spreads. So it doesn't have to be a real traditional sauce per se. And you can probably already tell I'm taking this probably far more seriously than I need to. But there's pride on the line. I've never won my family cook-off, and dang it, I want to win this year. So I need your help. Secret is in the sauce. Send those over to me. Other quick thing that I want to mention is a couple of episodes ago, I know a lot of you have listened to it, but I did an episode on wings with Hiro, my friend Hiro, who came on, and we talked about trying to master great chicken wings, great hot wings at home. And he had just gotten an air fryer, and I've heard other people talk about air fryers, and people have asked me to talk about and review the use of an air fryer on the show. Well, I didn't have an air fryer, so I couldn't really do that easily, but I just want to say I bit the bullet. I went out a couple of days ago and I got myself an air fryer. I got a small one. Didn't get a big crazy one. I just got a small one and I just ran over to Walmart to see what they had. Kind of made an impulse buy, and I haven't used it a lot yet, but I'm going to use it a little bit here more in the next coming couple of weeks. And I will get back to you all with some information on air fryers. I know a lot of you already have air fryers and you're totally in love with them. Hiro, for one, will go on and on about how it's the best way to make chicken wings at home. I haven't tried chicken wings yet, but I'm going to very soon. And maybe Hiro and I will get back together and share some of our impressions on air frying. So there is that. All right, let's get into some listener questions. And on the last episode, I actually mentioned this. I forgot to mention it at the beginning of the show, but over at thekitchencounterpodcast.com, the webpage, I have added in for, I think, a limited time. I'm not sure if I'm going to stick with this or not. It depends on how many folks take advantage of it. But I have a button at the top of the screen, whether you're on your mobile phone or desktop, that says send a voice message. And if you click on that button, you can record a voice message that will be sent to me. So you can ask a question, for example, or you can share an interesting cooking tip or something like that. But it'll be in your voice, and I'm going to select some of these over the coming weeks. And occasionally I might drop them into an episode for some real live listener. So it's not only me reading the questions, which I'm going to do as well, but it'll be actual listener voices, which is so cool. So I'm going to play one for you right now. And that's how I'm going to kick off today's listener question section. So this one comes from Catherine McCoy. So let's hear what Catherine has to say.
Hey, Roger, it's Catherine, longtime listener. Love your podcast so much. I have been recently trying to switch to more meatless meals, not to go strict vegetarian, but just to save money on buying meat. So I would love some suggestions on some meatless meals that still fill your stomach and have good protein. So love to hear what you think. Thanks.
All right. Good question. This is an interesting question because this is something that my wife and I think about as well. I don't say necessarily we're always successful at this, but I think it's a fantastic question. And yeah, even if you're not trying to go full vegetarian or vegan or something like that, you just want to save money on all the meat you're eating and buying. You want to maybe cut down your environmental impact maybe a little bit by cutting down some of the meat you're consuming. So yeah, Catherine, good question. What are some of the foods that still fill you up? And I guess what you're getting at is recipes where they're hearty, they're filling, they're delicious, and you don't really miss the meat. And there might be two angles to this, because I know a lot of folks that cook for other people, if they're trying to do this, maybe not everyone is super on board with this idea. So it's almost as if you're trying to find recipes where, fooling is the wrong word, but again, where the person who's really used to having meat in their meals isn't like, hey, where's the meat in this? It's just, it's almost not even noticeable that it's not in there. I don't know if that's your situation, Catherine, but I'm just getting to the point where there's like two ways you can look at this. Like everybody's embracing it and it doesn't really matter what you're eating, and maybe the other way, which is you're trying to be a little bit sneakier or a little less obvious about it. So my initial thought on this, and this is what I generally gravitate to if we're going to try to do something meatless, is things like soups, stews, and chilies are super, super easy to go meatless and still really easy to keep the amount of protein you're getting up in the recipe. You can keep that at a high level in those sorts of things. Like to me, a chili, that's the most obvious one, because for the meat that you take out of your chili, in fact, you can add so many other vegetables in to your chili in place of the meat to kind of keep it nice and thick and hearty, like, I don't know, sweet potatoes, corn, zucchini, you know, cubed turnips or parsnips or things like that, carrots. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff you can put into a chili that, I don't know, sometimes I even prefer that because you just get a nice broad range of flavors and your chili doesn't end up tasting just like meat in, you know, tomato-y chili sauce. The other place I think it's really easy to do this are pastas. And in fact, I will find a link to a recipe and put it in the show notes, but I used to make, and I haven't done this for a while, a vegetarian lasagna that it wasn't vegan. It still had plenty of cheese in it, but it used portobello mushrooms instead of meat. And it wasn't like they were there to mimic the meat. It was just they added a little bit of that umami, savory meat flavor. You know, they had a little bit of that texture in there, so you weren't really missing the meat. I will find a link to that and put it in the show notes. Those are a couple of ideas off the top of my head. Of course, with springtime here, it's a little bit harder to get away with like stews and chilies and heavy dishes like lasagna, but now might be a good time to start really experimenting with your salad skills. Because you can always make some pretty delicious salads that are meatless, that are wildly flavorful. And, you know, they're not as filling as like a big bowl of chili, but they're still good nonetheless, especially on like warm spring or summer days. And then the last thing I want to mention about this is I have this cookbook, and I will put a link to this in the show notes. This is by Kim O'Donnell, and this is the Meat Lover's Meatless Cookbook, Vegetarian Recipes Carnivores Will Devour. And it's really cool because she's arranged this book by season. So you've got the first season she has here is spring. So for example, let me just read a couple of things. A mushroom ragu, spinach and feta crostata, chickpea turnip chili, a barley pilaf, jig-inducing falafel burgers, all sorts of good stuff in there for spring. And then, of course, summer. Let's see what we've got for summer. Oh, chickpea crab cakes, hummus stuffed tomatoes, zucchini boats, stuffed bell peppers, romesco toasts, eggplant stacks. I mean, there's all sorts of really good recipes in this book. And they, again, this is by Kim O'Donnell, and this is the Meat Lover's Meatless Cookbook. So if you don't have that already, I really recommend you check that out because I think you'll find a lot in there to inspire you. So thank you so much, Catherine. That was a lot of fun. Again, if you want to send in some voice questions or voice feedback, head over to the kitchencounterpodcast.com and click that send a voice message button at the top of the screen, and I'll see what I can do to get you on the show. All right, let's jump into a couple of other questions that have come in. Now, full disclosure, I've already interacted with these folks, whether it came in on email or Facebook. So I've really already answered these questions, but I'm just kind of sharing them because I think they're interesting questions for everybody else. And here's a couple of questions that came in from Corey Nelson. So here is what Corey asks. I've never cooked with any kind of wine before, and I've seen several of your recipes call for either red or white wine. Sometimes you call it dry or not. I don't know any difference between it. If I got the red or white cooking wine, is that the same thing? Oh, also, he says that he made my mom's cinnamon roll recipes, and it was delicious. The whole family loved it. I appreciate that, Corey. I'll put the link to that in the show notes as well. I did mention that, and Corey hadn't gotten this far through the catalog yet, but I actually did a cooking with wine episode. I think it was episode 88 a couple of years ago. So that's a great place to start as well for wine-related questions. But here's the short answer, Corey for your question about cooking with wine. One, and this is a pretty hard and fast rule for me, stay away from anything that's marketed as a cooking wine. I don't think they're worth it, and they usually taste pretty terrible. I mean, they're seasoned heavily. They've got flavors added in. And other than a conservative splash here or there, I would not use them. There's no reason to, really. They're not versatile. If you have nothing against wine in principle, if you drink wine, if you don't mind cooking with it, there's no reason at all to buy cooking wine. You're much better served with just getting a decent wine right off the shelf at your grocery store. Now, most of the time, I would say if you're cooking with a savory dish, you want to cook with a dry wine. I think good go-to types of dry red wines would be an inexpensive Merlot or Pinot Noir. Cabernet is fine too. I mean, really, if it's something, if you hear this before, you've probably read it before, if it's something you would drink, you can cook with it. Yeah, I mean, I always say don't go to the bottom shelf of the wine rack, but maybe go one shelf up and don't get the absolute cheapest bottle of wine you can, especially if you're just planning on cooking with it and, you know, holding it in your fridge for a week or 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever to cook with. If you need a white wine that's dry, I would say a Pinot Gris or a Sauvignon Blanc would be fine. Again, you know, don't get the absolute cheapest, but don't spend a ton of money on wine that you just plan to cook with. So that's my two cents on the types of wine you should cook with. And of course, if a recipe calls for a very specific type of wine, get that type of wine. Like if you're making a chicken marsala, don't get a Cabernet because it's not going to be the same thing. It's not going to be a chicken marsala. It's not going to taste right. So yeah. And then Corey had a second question, and this is regarding making homemade mayonnaise. And he found a homemade mayonnaise recipe that I think called for canola or vegetable oil. And he wanted to know if it would be good or bad, or what would happen if he swapped out olive oil or avocado oil for the vegetable oil. So instead of 3 cups of vegetable oil in this recipe, he would use 3 cups of olive or 3 cups of avocado oil. I guess there's two answers to this. One is you certainly can use avocado oil or olive oil, and your mayonnaise is probably going to come out exactly the same way if you just do a straight substitution and follow the recipe otherwise. You know, as far as oils go, they're going to act pretty much the same in that mayonnaise recipe. However, it is going to cost quite a bit more, right? 3 cups of olive oil is fairly expensive. 3 cups of vegetable oil is probably, I don't know, a quarter of that cost, a third of that cost. So keep that in mind. You know, maybe if it's your first time making homemade mayonnaise, stick with the vegetable oil until you get it figured out. And then if you want to change the flavor or the health component, if that's what you're going for, then you can look at doing something like an olive oil once you know what you're doing and you're comfortable. So Corey, thank you very much for those two questions. That was excellent. All right. The next question I want to cover here is from Robert Lopshire or Lopshire. Robert, I don't know how to pronounce your last name, but I do have a quick tangent to go on about your name. Every time I see your name, because you're a member of the Facebook group as well, and you're fairly active in there, every time I see your last name, all I can think of is the Bugs Bunny cartoons with Daffy Duck, where he's like the Sherlock Holmes guy, and Porky Pig's, I think it's Porky Pig, is like Watson, and his nemesis is the Shropshire Slasher. I hope some of you are getting this reference. I know some of you are like, what the heck is he talking about? But anyway, every time I see Lopshire or Lopshire, I think of the Shropshire Slasher. Oh boy. Okay, that was a long way around. Robert, totally sorry about that, but I just had to mention it. Anyway, your question, you said you recently purchased some ground turmeric as a friend had recommended it. Here's the thing. I'm anxious to start cooking with it, but I can't seem to make it through the barrage of media recipes beyond health shakes, lattes, and highly nutritional health claims. To be honest, I didn't know any of this. I purchased it to experiment with the flavors. I enjoy savory and spicy dishes, and I'm not looking to make a coconut sorbet, turmeric, long rice, latte, paleo smoothie. You and me both. So any suggestions, cooking tips, or ideas using it with chicken, pork, beef, or any other proteins? Can I safely use it instead of another ingredient such as curry or cumin? What about pasta dishes, chili soup, and or stews? Good question. And, you know, I'm 100% with you there, Robert. Yeah, I'm sure it's great, but can we just all give it a rest with the superfood stuff? I mean, I feel like the poor blueberries are over in the corner going like, what's the big deal about turmeric? You know, we were the big deal a year ago or whatever. Anyway, here's the deal. And this is kind of a generic answer I give to a lot of people when it comes to stuff like this. Use it however you want it. But in order to understand how you want to use it, of course, you got to taste it. You got to know what it tastes like. You got to experiment with it a little bit. And, you know, turmeric, if you haven't ever tasted it, and I'm sure you have, Robert, but for any of you that haven't tasted it, get a little bit, taste it. It's a relative of ginger. It's a rhizome. It's a root product. Doesn't really taste like ginger. You know, ginger has kind of a spicy, sweet, you know what ginger tastes like, right? Ginger cookies, ginger ale, that sort of a thing. Turmeric has a little bit, to me, more of an earthy, more of a bitter, maybe a little pungent, not spicy pungent, but just kind of that dry, earthy flavor. And most curry powders, or a lot of curry powders, use turmeric as one of their primary ingredients. And one of the other notable things about turmeric is that it imparts a very vivid color if you use any sort of quantity of it, and it will stain, so you have to be careful. Some folks call it like imposter saffron. You know, saffron, if you cook with that, will often impart a beautiful golden yellow hue to your food. In fact, I talked about it on the risotto alla milanese episode I did a few episodes back. Turmeric will actually give it a similar color, a different taste, but it will still impart that kind of vivid, bright yellowish orange color. So if you're looking to use turmeric as like a wholesale substitute in a recipe for curry powder or cumin, I probably wouldn't advise that necessarily, but I don't think you're going to ruin your dish if you use a lot more turmeric when you're cooking with your proteins or your pastas or anything like that. Again, I think the most important thing to keep in mind is that it's going to really affect the visual impact of your dish and the color. But, you know, and as far as you how you use turmeric, you know, you can buy it in whole root form, which I'm seeing more and more in the grocery now, but typically it comes already ground into powder and you would use it just like you would use any other dried ground spice. I think it's probably high time in the next couple of episodes or so that I do another spice-based episode, and maybe I'll pick three or four spices and do a deep dive on each one of them and maybe include some recipes as well. But I'll try to dig up some good recipes with turmeric and put them in the show notes for today. All right, I think I've got time for one more question today. So let's jump over to Facebook here. Irene Voss, and this is a short and sweet one, or maybe I should say short and savory. Irene asks, is Himalayan salt the best, meaning healthiest, salt to use in everyday cooking? This is an interesting question, and here's my non-chemist, non-dietitian answer for this. So one, all salt that you can eat, can't eat all salt, but all edible salt, is very similar from a chemical perspective. Now, salts will differ based upon things like differences in minerals, which is why, for example, you see Himalayan salt as pink, or some sea salt can have a different texture or odor. But the differences in minerals are so small that they don't really affect human nutrition, because you're eating the salt in such tiny, tiny quantities. The amount of trace minerals aren't really impacting you in any significant way. You're probably getting more of those trace minerals in the actual food you're eating rather than the salt you're seasoning it with. Now, that being said, you should 100% of the time use what you like to cook with, what you're comfortable cooking with, and what works for you, you know, financially or whatever. So if you like to use Himalayan salt for everyday cooking, I say it's not going to, go for it. It's not going to hurt anything. It might be a little more expensive than just your regular kosher salt or table salt or, you know, a standard sea salt. But do it because you like it and you like the color and you think the flavor is good or whatever. Don't do it necessarily for the perceived health benefits, because I think in this case, it's, again, you're not eating enough of it to make much of a difference. Plus, you know, salt is salt. And if you eat too much of it, it's not necessarily a good thing for you regardless. All right, Irene, thank you so much for that question. So I'm kind of out of time today, folks. So I'm going to wrap it up there. All right, everybody. Well, you know what? That's going to do it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I really, really appreciate you tuning in and spending a little bit of time with me. Remember, send me your feedback, send me your questions, send me your sauce ideas for my cook-off. And if you're so inclined, share the podcast with family and friends who might get a little bit of value out of it as well. One more time, if you need the show notes, kitchencounterpodcast.com/135. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening. And until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.